The Kronos Quartet performs our theme music. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:59, and coming up at 10:15, Flashpoints is off today, we'll hear Letters and Politics with Professor of History Elizabeth Hinton discussing her book, From the War on Poverty to the War on Crime, The Making of Mass Incarceration in America. At 11 on stage and studio, host Dime Roberts speaks with veteran playwright Philip Khan Gotanda, who is now a traveling master for the Dramatist Guild Fund, about his class called Challenges of Writing from a Radical and Cultural Perspective at Portland Center Stage. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews architects Robert Hoffman and Brian Kavanaugh about Snøhetta, the Norwegian architecture firm that is designing the James Beard Public Market in downtown Portland and the Willamette Falls Riverwalk in Oregon City. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the United States premiere of Liza, 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 produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs from May 5th through the 28th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. Join Liza Minnelli at three different stages of her life, often all on stage at the same time, with plenty of songs, backstories about the iconic and troubled daughter of Judy Garland, with a bit of dancing and prancing and much humor among the frightening tales of drink, drug abuse, broken legs, strokes, and hip replacements. Again, that's Liza, 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 May 5th through the 28th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, May 24th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, real community radio for real people at 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. We've got just a few seconds of weather for you today. Partly sunny, highs around 69, and wind not much in the way of wind, 3 to 8 miles per hour tonight. Overcast skies for the most part, with a low around 52. West-northwest, 5 to 9 miles per hour for tomorrow. Slight chance of rain or perhaps drizzle. And then a few more showers from here and there. Highs around 64, and it's not wind, not worth saying very much about. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, and lows around 51. That's about it for the weather. It's been pretty consistent for the last few days. I've got one note for everybody. There's a public hearing on the environmental review of the Millennium Bulk Terminal Longview, submitted an application for its proposed coal export terminal, as we all know, at the site of the former Reynolds Aluminum smelter. Ecology and Calhoun County are coal lead agencies preparing the environmental impact assessment under the State Environmental Policy Act. U.S. Army of Corps of Engineers is also preparing a separate EIS under the NEPA, or the National Environmental Policy Act. Mostly we just call it NEPA, right? So if anybody wants to weigh in on that, it's in Longview, Cowlitz County Regional Event Center, 1 to 9 p.m., and you can go there, get on the list. Directions are on the web. You can easily find them, or call KBOO will be able to give you directions. So that's coming up today, this evening. So brace yourself for that. We've got a lot of news. We've got an extraordinary guest we have joining us today, Elizabeth Henderson with the Northeast Organic Farmers Association and Peaceworks Farm. There are some wonderful videos. If you want to feel better about everything, you can go to websites, listen to the and watch those videos about Peaceworks Farm and the Genevieve Valley Organics CSA. It's an amazing CSA. It's been around for decades, and they definitely do it right. It's a beautiful, beautiful farm as well. This comes to us via Jonathan Latham, who is an inexhaustible source of all things to do with science and the natural environment. What we're going to be talking about today is the egregiously obvious fact that opponents of GMOs, genetically modified organisms, including organic farmers, such as our guest today, Elizabeth, are routinely called anti-science. But it isn't our organic farmers who prevent independent university researchers from assessing their seeds, nor do organic farmers ignore scientific evidence of rising pesticide use and human harm. Organic farmers do work with universities to improve their methods. However, they want more money for organic research. So, asks Elizabeth Henderson, who are the real anti-scientists here? We'll be speaking very, very shortly. A website called Little Sis is pairing up with Muck Rock to investigate how police are monitoring, tracking, and archiving what you post online. Not only that, ProPublica has a very fascinating story about profiling. Wow, if you happen to be any color other than white, you are likely to be, according to just many police departments, technology, likely to be assessed to be a high risk of perpetrating crimes. That they take a look at a photograph, a mugshot, as it were, of people who might be brought in for very, very slight things. It would normally be like just a slight misdemeanor. And if someone is anything other than white, they are assessed to be high risk or medium risk, whereas white faces, regardless of how utterly, very often they appear to be perhaps incapacitated by something they might have taken, no matter how extraordinarily unkempt the face might appear, they are judged to be very low risk. Take a look at these pictures on the ProPublica website, and it's all there. It says a great deal more than I could possibly tell you about it. There's a lot more to say about GMOs from all different directions right now. Josephine County, right here in Oregon, notably. And Steve Horn's latest piece came out just the other day. He on Intercept, it's the obvious timeliness, of course, of the forthcoming California and New Mexico Democratic Party presidential primaries, in which fracking is a key part of the debate, and between Sanders and Clinton. I doubt whether Trump ever bothers to have any kind of dialogue with himself regarding fracking or pretty much anything else. And so moving right along through the quick scan of a few headlines, the charges that the U.S. District Judge Anna Brown is considering regarding the Malheur defendants. It's extraordinary. It really does sound like as though the defense assumes that they are in the right. The defense of the Malheur occupiers, of course, is basically simply discharge everything and and let them go. It's reading through the defense's position on the charges. It's an extraordinarily arrogant approach to jurisprudence. That said, Canyonland versus Cattleland, and again, in a tangential way, this relates to the Malheur occupation. This always, though, lights up the divide between short-term profit-motivated and the long-term futurists. There was a hearing yesterday attended by ranchers and environmentalists in Olympia on the proposal to turn 2.5 million acres of pristine, beautiful canyonlands, a desert in southeastern Oregon, into a federally protected monument. And it's that word monument that has got everybody hot under the collar. This is, of course, Owyhee Canyonlands. It's an area known for spectacular stark scenery. It's used right now currently by fishermen, rafters, ranchers, and others. So it is being used by ranchers. It's just that the question of whether it should be declared a monument or not, that has got people pretty wound up. And The Guardian published a stunning new chapter in the saga of NSA whistleblowers this past Sunday, revealing a new key player, John Crane, a former assistant inspector general at the Pentagon, who was responsible for protecting whistleblowers and then forced to become one himself. This is an article by Mark Hertzgard. It has been featured recently on Democracy Now, but there is going to be an editorial coming out in the New York Times shortly, today or tomorrow, I believe. Mark himself will be on Air Cascadia on Thursday, so stay tuned for that. I believe we have. Do we have Elizabeth on the line yet? Oh, I'm so sorry. Excuse me, Elizabeth. Are you there?
Yeah,
thank you. I'm sorry to keep you waiting. So I would have wondered if you could talk just a little bit about this accusation that organic farmers are anti-scientific. It seems preposterous to me.
Well, that's the accusation that's thrown at us by the biotech people. They say that we're anti-science. But what they really mean is that we're anti-GMO. So anything we say in criticism of genetically modified organisms or the way it's been commercialized is taken and twisted into being anti-science. That's, really kind of irritating and unfair. And so that's what set me off to write that essay. Because one of our number, an organic farmer whom I respect very much, came to one of our meetings of the net where we're trying to create a New York organic action plan, and she appealed to us to reconsider the ban on genetically modified organisms in organic agriculture. So I wanted to think it through really thoroughly and be respectful to her because she is a farmer for whom I have the highest regard. But my conclusion was, no, we shouldn't change our position.
Well, I find it amazing that someone who's a member of an organic farming group would even consider it. Recently, it came out that after two decades, 20 years of experience with GMOs, that they were considered to be completely safe. Well, I don't know whether or not they're safe for humans. I don't think 20 years is enough. But in any case, we're not talking about just human beings. This is a whole elaborate, very, very complex network of organisms. Can you speak a bit to this issue about why and how it is that we could, after 20 years, decide that GMOs were completely safe down the food chain?
Well, I highly recommend that people read the book by Stephen Drucker, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, because he tells the whole story of how it happened that the Food and Drug Administration decided that genetically modified organisms are generally considered as safe, that there's no material difference between them and you know, an heirloom tomato, say. It's a really important story that he tells in great detail. So I recommend that book.
We have very little time left. If
you know whether the actual cultivars that they are purveying as GMOs are safe, because each one of them is different. Mm. Each operation where you insert genes in a different place in a genome has a different effect. And each cultivar interacts differently with its environment and all the conditions of its life on the planet. So each one has to be tested individually. That's the problem. They can't have a blanket statement that they're all safe. It may be that some are safe, and it may be that some are wonderful discoveries. And my, you know, organic farmer friend is right. There may be some GMOs that will really help us solve problems, but we don't know that, and we don't know that they're safe without really extensive testing that hasn't happened.
So, Elizabeth, I wish we had more time. I'd like to have you back. I'm so sorry that we ran short today. But I'd like also to hear more about Peaceworks Farms and some of the CSA that you've been involved with. For now, though, would you just quickly give listeners the website where they can find the essay?
Where they can find my essay?
Yes, yes.
It's at independentscience.org.
Thank you so much for that. Please do join us again in the very near future. This has been El Cascadia for Tuesday, May 24th, 2016. Janet Anderson engineered the show for us today. Thanks, Janet. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Good day and welcome to Letters on Politics. I'm Mitch Jezerich. The Crime Bill of 1994 is getting a lot of attention again, officially known as